This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton, local author, historian, cartographer, joins us in studio on Fridays to talk about local history. And Rick is online at rickbritton.com, and you can see examples of your maps there, right?
That's right, my cartography.
And what are you working on now? Are you working on some maps right now?
I am. I've got some maps that I'm doing for the papers of George Washington. You know, that series here is at the University of Virginia on the fourth floor of Alderman Library. So I'm doing some maps for those folks. And I've got a map that I'm working on for the University of Georgia Press.
Oh, cool.
So those are my projects right now for
Good.
The next week or so. Yeah.
Do you sit at one of those like slanted desks that cartoonists sit at?
I do, yeah. With a big lamp hanging over me and all these special pens.
How do you stop the stuff from sliding down?
And the radio blaring.
There you go.
Yeah. Talk radio.
How do you keep your pens and stuff from sliding down?
It has
those
a little
tables.
Ledge on the bottom.
All those
desks have ledges.
There you go.
It starts to roll.
Now, you want to say hello to somebody who might be listening.
I do. I think she's at home listening with my wife, Victoria. My granddaughter, Savannah, is at home, and I want to say hi. Hi, sweetie. I'll see you when I get home.
All right, Savannah.
She's got a big birthday coming up in a little over a week. She's going to be five.
Yeah, there you go.
And I think this is the first time she's heard me on the radio.
There you go.
Hi, sweetie.
Five is a great age.
I
got two fives at home. It's awesome.
It is.
It really is. They're all awesome, but something magical about five. I don't know what happens, but it's been great.
That's great.
We're about halfway through five. Now, Rick, before we get to Pickett's Charge, the new magazine is out, correct?
Yeah, we talked about this a couple of times ago. It's the magazine of Albemarle County History, and I'm the editor. It comes out once a year, and it just came out. And it's got some great articles, one about a friendship between Jefferson and a Hessian officer who was here with the folks out at the barracks out there. Another one is about domestic violence in Thomas Jefferson's family, and that's a pretty awesome one. Another one is about the Civil War, the university during the Civil War and what happened. The university came real close to closing during the Civil War.
They got down to like 50 students,
didn't they? They really did. And most of those were wounded Confederate veterans, wounded Virginia veterans. And then another one is about the first Jefferson School, a school for the newly freed African Americans after the emancipation, after the Civil War. So some interesting articles.
Domestic violence at Monticello?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gosh,
absolutely.
Just the title alone is.
Yeah, I know.
That's pretty...
It sounds like one of those tabloids.
Yeah, it's like Tonight at 11.
That's right.
Domestic violence at Monticello. And then your mattress is killing you. News at 11. Gosh. So we definitely want to talk about Pickett's Charge. So let's not waste any more of your time.
That's right.
What is Pickett's Charge? And take us there in time.
Well, you know, what's amazing, I thought a lot about this driving in, and boy, the traffic was awful out there just a little while ago, but Pickett's Charge is arguably probably the most famous charge in American history, and it was on July 3rd, 1863. It was the third day of the Battle of Gettysburg, and combat had happened on the Confederate left and on the Confederate right, and so on the third day, Robert E. Lee thought that in order to sustain those battles, that Meade had taken reinforcements out of the Federal center, so he felt that the Union Army along Cemetery Ridge was the weakest, and so he thought he would try them in the center.
And where are we?
We're at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, the third day of the battle, so it's already been fairly brutal. It ended up being, you know, the largest battle during the Civil War, over 3 days, the most casualties. So this is on the third day. It's the last attempt to break the Federal Army from their fishhook position. They were I don't know if you've ever seen the maps of it, but
no,
with Cemetery Ridge and Culp's Hill and some of the others, it forms a little fish hook. So he had their right in particular turned back, but this one went right. This attack went right up the center. It was about 11,000 Confederates. It's hard to tell exactly how many. About half of that, maybe a little bit over 5,000, were from George Pickett's division in three brigades and 15 regiments, five in each one of those brigades, and one of those regiments was comprised largely of guys from right here in Charlottesville and Albemarle County, and that was the 19th Virginia Infantry, and they were smack dab in the middle of that attack,
and
440 of them.
We're talking with Rick Britton. Gettysburg, of course, is the farthest north the Confederates got, right?
That's true, in a large battle.
Yeah.
That was actually an action in Vermont. during the Civil War.
What were they doing up there?
Some raiders came across, I think it's St. Albans, Vermont. Some raiders came across from Canada and robbed all the banks in this little town in Vermont and then rode back across the border.
And they were Confederates or just Canadians?
No, Confederates. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Confederate raiders out of Canada.
How'd they get up there?
They got up there by boat. You know, and then organized just over the border into Canada.
I've never heard of that.
Then raided across, and I think it's St. Albans.
Now, where was Lee's army going if they were successful at Gettysburg? Where were they headed?
Well, that's a really good question. The idea is to win a major battle on northern soil. And a lot of people, and there's been a great book that came out recently that argues that really what it was a big raid. The main thing was to gather foodstuffs and cattle outside of the state and bring it back. And of course, anytime Lee leaves the state, then the federal forces arrayed against him, they have to leave to follow him. That takes the war out of the state of Virginia for a while and gives the farmers here a respite so they can bring in their harvest. So a lot of people have been arguing lately that that's the main idea, is to get the war briefly out of Virginia, gather a lot of stuff, and they did. I mean, they brought back a lot of cattle, a lot of fresh horses, a lot of foodstuffs from this giant raid. So that's,
and did that help them continue longer than they would have?
It probably did. Yeah, it probably did. Because you'd have to say, what are they going to do when they win? Now, they're not really going to take New York. A lot of people would argue that they couldn't really take Washington either if they'd won the Battle of Gettysburg. So what are they going to do up there? They can't stay. Their supply lines are very
stretched thin.
Very stretched thin, attenuated.
Yep. So there was some measure of victory then from Gettysburg for
perhaps,
the Confederates.
Yeah, perhaps if you look at it as a big raid. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's take us now to that third day. Was it the morning of the third day at Gettysburg?
It was the early afternoon. And so what they did was they brought the infantry up behind a massive array of Confederate artillery, over 200 guns, and they had them lay down behind the guns while this extended artillery combat went off. The idea is to soften up the positions on Cemetery Ridge. And I wrote this down so that I could tell you, I always thought this was interesting. A lot of people have argued that this, when they went off, because they fired two signal guns and then all the guns went off simultaneously.
Guns meaning cannons?
All the cannons, yeah. So people have argued that sound, along with the explosion in 1883 of Krakatoa, in Indonesia, that those were the two loudest sounds in all of the 19th century all across the earth.
Wow.
So that combat lasted about an hour. Now, it's really tough for infantrymen to lay down behind artillery because they're taking casualties and not be able to reply. So that hour and a little bit, that was really tough for those poor Confederate infantrymen. And I've told this story before, but Lieutenant Colonel Ellis, the second in command of the 19th Virginia, was lying down in front of the regiment and his head was in a little depression. And this bounding artillery solid shot, came bounding down in his direction. And somebody behind him yelled, "Look out, Colonel Ellis." And he lifted his head just in time for the ball to take it off.
Oh,
so that,
my God.
That'll really mess up your afternoon.
So they fire these cannons and they start moving out across the field?
That's
or did
right.
they run or what? How was?
No, it was done at the common time. It was this a really slow kind of advance over the better part of 3/4 of a mile. Along the way, they had some obstacles to go through. Right in the middle, in between their position on Seminary Ridge and the area that they were focusing on, where there was a stone wall, it's called the Angle, and a copse of trees behind it. That was on Cemetery Ridge. Right in between was the Emmitsburg Pike. And so they took a lot of casualties because the pike was encased between really solid fences, wooden fences on either side. So as they climbed up on those fences to get over
them, they were targets.
Yeah, they exposed themselves. So they took a lot of casualties right there at the Emmitsburg Pike. Then they reformed on the other side and they still had to go up this ridge. As they're going up the ridge, there were Federal skirmishers in front that were hiding in tall grass. So these fellas stood up right in front of them and put a volley right into them at close range. So the 19th Virginia Infantry was kind of staggered.
Remind us again, how many people on the Confederacy are making this charge and how many are on the other side, the Union troops?
In Pickett's division, Pickett's division was reinforced by two other depleted divisions on its left, but they didn't necessarily go as far as Pickett's men did. Pickett's division was about 5,000 men, maybe a little bit less, in three brigades. They're in two lines, two brigades in front and one under Louis Armistead in back as a reinforcing brigade. Garnett's brigade is where the 19th Virginia Infantry was, right in the middle, and they were in that front line on the left. Kemper's brigade was on the right.
And those were the boys from Charlottesville.
The boys from Charlottesville were in the 19th Virginia Infantry, right in the middle of Garnett's brigade.
How many of those guys? Well, finish what happened.
440 of them began the attack when they were reformed a little over an hour later after, of course, they lost the attack. There were only 270 of them left. So in 1 hour, they had lost 170 men in just 1 hour.
Golly.
Kind of a crushing blow
to a
unit that size.
And men from here, of course, perished.
They were men from here, yeah. And let's put a face on some of these guys. It's really interesting if you look at the roster and you read some of the names. There were Carpenters, Prophets, Garths, Omahundros.
What's a Garth? Oh, you mean
it's
the name?
Latin names,
name.
Yeah. Hamners, what's a Garth? Like Garth Road.
Yeah.
Hamners, Morrises, Norrises, Shiflets, Sprouses, Wingfields, Says, Pearlys. So if you look in the phone book today,
all the old Charlottesville names.
All of those Charlottesville names were around back then. Most of them were farmers, but there were also clerks, blacksmiths, lawyers, shoemakers, tanners, coopers, dentists, stonecutters. One guy had listed his name when he enlisted. He'd listed his occupation, rather, as ambrotypist. Are you familiar with what an ambrotypist is? Photographer.
So he was that's what they called it then?
Well, that's what he called himself, an ambrotypist. Yep, yep.
Wow. So what was the end result? I mean, they're charging up. They're going. Were they just slaughtered? The Confederates were slaughtered?
They suffered very heavy casualties, probably about 35-40% on the way up to that hill, on the way up to that stone wall. They made it to the stone wall. The 19th Virginia crouched behind the stone wall and volleyed into the Federals. There was this brief hand-to-hand combat at the wall. The Northern troops retired into that copse of trees, and then the reinforcements started coming from all sides. While they were at the wall, Armistead's brigade came up behind them, and Lewis Armistead, and I know everybody's seen those famous illustrations, Armistead put his slouch hat on his saber and led the men over the wall and into the Federal guns. And probably a lot of men from the 19th Virginia Infantry joined him in that attack, with maybe about 200 men over the wall. So we're talking about the very center of the Federal line. Now, all 200 of those men were either killed, wounded, or captured. So there they are. The survivors of this attack are at this wall. They see this huge counterattack brewing, and they realize, just like one of the memoirists wrote later on, that the result was either going to be death or, if they stayed, you know, imprisonment in a federal prisoner of war camp. So this one guy in particular, Nat Wood, he started running back across that 3/4 mile. That must have been really tough.
Yeah.
He'd been hit on his way to the wall. He was hit again by another mini ball on his way back. So he was hit twice.
So, Rick, how long did it last?
The whole thing lasted about an hour, approximately an hour.
And this was the last great charge of the South, right? I mean, in the last great battle.
No, actually, there were other charges. In fact, there was even a large Confederate charge during the Siege of Petersburg. This is arguably the most famous. Yeah, this has been probably the most famous charge or single attack in American history. One of the interesting things at the end is as the 19th Virginia receded, the 19th Massachusetts advanced and occupied their place on the opposite side of the stone wall, and they noticed that a battle flag was leaning up against the wall, and Private Benjamin Falls jumped up on the wall and grabbed it to take it. But he couldn't move it. It was stuck, and he looked down, and one of the men from the color guard in the 19th Virginia Infantry was wounded but still holding on to it. And Falls yelled at him, you know, let go of that thing or I'm going to run you through.
Oh, I got chills.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And the guy from the color guard let go of it. Well, Benjamin Falls won the Congressional Medal of Honor for capturing the flag of the 19th Virginia Infantry. Now, because it was the 19th capturing the 19th, they cut the 19 out of it. They cut the unit designation off of the flag. Now, later on in the 1920s, Northern flags were returned to the South, you know, as a symbol of the reunification of the country, you know, all those years later, 60 years later. And that ended up in the Museum of the Confederacy. A few years ago, a group that I belonged to, we raised $10,000 to have that flag conserved.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really something. Rick Britton, he's online at rickbritton.com. Pickett's Charge of 1863.
Right.
What a story. Rick, you join us next week, next Friday.
Absolutely.
We'll continue the conversation then.
You've been listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. The show can be heard every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 o'clock on News Radio 1070 WINA. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at SevillePodcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, why not check out our site for hours and hours of archives of Coy's show? You'll also find other radio programs, arts features, public affairs coverage, and more.